Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This week's episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, a full-service regulatory compliance consulting firm serving the ambulatory surgery industry, and Eden Group Development, publisher of the ASC Regulatory Compliance series of books by John Gailey.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. This is our episode number 7, being aired on February 12th, 2018. And I am Judy D'Ambrosio, your co-host here for the podcast. And this is where I usually begin with news of the week, tidbits of information that you may find useful. But before I do that, what I'd like to do is share a little bit of some personal news for us here at the podcast. We're very proud and pleased that with this episode, episode number 7, we are launched nationally so that now we can be found on iTunes and TuneIn and certainly from our website. John's going to talk to you a little bit later about how to access it or how to tell your friends to access it, because obviously you are listening, so you've accessed it. But we're very excited and very proud and pleased, and we wanted to tell you that you were going to be listening to the one podcast where we started off nationally live. Now, we're going to start with, again, the news of the week. There's a few things that we wanted to share with you, things that we thought you would find interesting. The first of which, there was an article by Karen Newberry. This came out earlier in February, and it's just to discuss what's come off the inpatient-only list for surgeries. So one of the most heavily discussed policy changes, in this calendar year, 2018, Hospital Outreach Prospective Payment Systems, the OPPS, has removed the total knee arthroplasty from the Medicare's inpatient-only list. So this is sort of exciting because they've removed it from the inpatient-only list. This is not to say that it's on the ASC payable list yet, but its removal from the inpatient list is certainly a positive step in that direction toward being reimbursed in the ASC setting for this. Wanted to let you know that it was out there, that it's being talked about and discussed, and hopefully it will be added to our ASC list soon enough. Another article we found interesting this week that we wanted to share with you, especially since, as all of us are very aware of how detrimental and almost vicious, you could say. So we found this article about how 4 in 10 healthcare professionals show up to work while they're sick. So it was a study done by a paper in Arlington, Virginia. And this new study suggests that healthcare professionals should heed their own advice and stay home when they're sick, which is exactly what we tell our patients. So the study says that some 4 in 10 healthcare providers work while experiencing flu-like symptoms, according to this published report from the American Journal of Infection Control. So we find this alarming. There was an earlier study that showed that patients who are exposed to healthcare workers who are sick are 5 times more likely to get a healthcare-associated infection. One of the things we strive to do is to lessen or completely eliminate our hospital-acquired or center-acquired infections. That's one of the biggest reasons why we should not come to work when we're sick if these patients are 5 times more likely to get a healthcare-associated infection. And this came out from the CDC, from Sophia Chu from the CDC, so that they recommend, the CDC, as do John and I, that we recommend that all healthcare facilities take steps to support and encourage their staff not to come to work when they're sick. The survey was of some 1,900 healthcare providers, 414 of which reported working for at least 3 days while experiencing flu-like symptoms. The most common reasons for this is people feel bad. They feel that he or she are needed to do their job duties. They don't really feel bad enough to stay home in bed. They don't think they're contagious. They feel an obligation to both their coworkers and the patients that are coming in. And sometimes you have to find someone to cover for you, and at short notice, that's really difficult. And we acknowledge those things. But really, your patient's well-being and their health is the biggest thing at stake. And especially since this year has been so bad, you know, has been so frightening. So we are suggesting that you opt to stay at home. And we're also suggesting that if you are an administrator and you're at the front lines, that you tell your people you would much prefer they stay home and got well than come in and bring those, you know, those awful germs to their patients or their coworkers. And maybe next year's study like this will show far less healthcare providers that think that they want to come to work when they're sick. So the last thing I want to talk about, as I sit here in, you know, lovely Rochester, New York, and I look out my window at all the snow, I think it's important that we talk a little bit about how it's important to have severe weather policies in place. Now, I know not all of you, you know, are in this, the snow belt like John and I are, but remember, the new disaster preparedness that went into effect at the end of last year in November states that you need to have policies in place for unforeseen circumstances. So those of us up here up north, and really this year, it's kind of been even a little bit down south, you can deal with some severe weather or snow emergencies. So we want you to go back and look at your emergency preparedness policies. Look to see if you have one for severe weather. Make sure that that's in place and that everybody on your staff knows how to deal with what to do if for some reason there is a snow emergency where they can't get into work, or there's transportation issues that need to be dealt with, or making decisions whether or not to close the center and contact their patients. Sit down, talk about the risk of that for yourselves, go through your risk assessment that you should have done when you put these policies in place, and talk about what strategies are best for you, because it doesn't look like the winter is going anywhere, regardless of what Punxsutawney Phil said last week. So again, just a reminder, look over that policy and see what you can do to make sure that everyone on your staff is aware of it and that you have a good structure in place for what to do if the emergency arises. Okay, that's it for news. John's going to talk briefly about how you can tell your friends ways to find this podcast, especially if you think it's something that they'd be interested in, and to share that with your friends.
Thank you, Judy. And like you, I'm very excited about our launch today. We've been working on this podcast concept for several months now, and we actually started recording on January 1st. We did a soft launch to get some feedback in mid-January, and based upon that feedback, we made, you know, a number of adjustments to try to improve the quality of our content and to more closely align what we're doing with the listener needs. Over the next couple months, you'll see even more adjustments as we try to continue to meet the needs of our listeners out there. Obviously, you found us, but we want to make sure that you tell all of your friends about us. So just note that we're available on multiple podcast locations on the internet, including iTunes, TuneIn. We're on Alexa. Just tell you know who to play the ASC podcast on TuneIn. We use TuneIn extensively here at the company and in our own homes. And it's a very easy and quick way to be able to get your podcast right to your speaker in your house. You can also use the Podbean, that's P-O-D-B-E-A-N, app on your Apple or Android device. And of course, you can always access all of our episodes on our website, which just launched at www.ascpodcast.com. That's www.ascpodcast.com. Over the next few months, we're going to start introducing additional premium content that will supplement our weekly podcast. This content will include special episodes that go into greater detail about various issues that just can't fit into the half-hour format that we're using. And we're also working on developing what we'll call an inner circle for now of users that will give you access to a wide range of additional material to support the on-air content. It's very important that we thank our producing sponsor, which is Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, which is based in Rochester, New York, where we live, which provides some of the financial support that makes this podcast possible. So please make sure you consider their services if you need regulatory guidance. They are a full-service regulatory oversight firm.
So I wanted to finish this segment by talking about the upcoming Certified Ambulatory Surgery Center Administrator exam. That's called the CASC exam. For those of you who are not familiar with CASC, CASC is the professional credential for administrators in the ambulatory surgery industry. For more information about CASC, please go to aboutcasc.org on the internet, and you get everything you ever wanted to know about the CASC credential and the exam. The next exam will be a pencil and paper exam, and it's going to be at the ASCA 2018 conference, annual conference, in Boston, Massachusetts, in the Hines Convention Center. That's going to be on April 14th, 2018, between 8 and 12 p.m. To sign up for this exam, you need to get your application in online at aboutcast.org between February 1st and February 28th, 2018. There will be two other exams this year. One is going to be between July 1st and July 31st, 2018, electronically. And again, you have to submit your application between May 1st and May 31st, 2018. There are testing centers throughout the United States that you can go to take this exam for that exam period. There's the last exam period in 2018 will be between October 1st and October 31st, 2018. The electronic application must be submitted by August 31st, and the application period is between August 1st and August 31st, 2018. So if you're interested in becoming CAST, please make sure you sign up for the exam in time. Also, consider taking the CAST review course also at the ASCA 2018 conference. It's going to be on Wednesday, April 11th. It's a full-day course. I'll be teaching the finance section of that on the 11th. So the CAST review course is a good way to check your readiness to be able to take the CASC review, the CASC exam. It doesn't provide you all the information you need to know in order to pass the exam, but it helps you to know what your strengths and weaknesses are and what areas you might have to continue doing some study for. So definitely consider that. Sign up today. Go to the ASC Association website for more information about that review course.
So again, we'd like to thank our listeners for listening to us, and back to you, Judy.
We're going to take just a little bit of a break. After that, we're going to go into our scenario. I think we're doing a fire emergency drill today, which ought to be humorous in and of itself. So don't go away. Coming up next is something important, so don't leave us.
So let's look in on our friends at the surgery center as they handle their first fire drill. This was unannounced, and during normal working hours, only the fire captain was aware of the drill.
What in the world is that noise?
Dad, it certainly is annoying. Wait, the girls in billing are putting on their coats. Maybe it's a fire drill.
Oh, that's probably it.
But they didn't announce a drill. What if it's a real fire?
See here how one employee ruffles through the belongings on her desk?
Wait, I need my purse and my phone and, wait, the picture of my dog. Come here, Pickles.
Oh, Marcy, stop panicking. I'm sure this is just a drill.
The two ladies rush to the doorway into the main corridor.
See? It is a real fire. Look at everybody.
Employees are rushing through the hallway, tripping over other employees trying to evacuate the patients.
Get out of my way with that wheelchair! God, it's every man for himself!
Marcy, get a hold of yourself. Shouldn't we see if we can help?
Yeah, you help. I'm out of here.
The second employee turns down the OR corridor to see if she can help with patients, while Marcy continues to run toward the door, hip-checking co-workers as she passes them, until she runs directly into the center's fire captain.
Marcy, slow down. What are you doing with all these things?
Well, I couldn't let my picture of Pickles burn in the fire.
Marcy, this is a drill. Nothing's going to burn. Remember our in-service last week? Do you remember RACE?
Oh, geez, I wasn't paying any attention to you. I have no idea.
RACE stands for Rescue. Did you help with any patients? Alarm. Did you make sure others in the area were aware of the alarm? Contain. Was the fire in your area? If it was, did you try to contain it? And finally, evacuate, which it appears you've mastered.
Well, there was no way I could have remembered all of that, and we were sort of in a hurry.
Well, that would explain why you're standing here with an arm full of personal items.
The fire captain tries to hide his disappointment here.
Looks like we'll have to repeat that INSERS.
Okay, John, I found this funny as we were working on this skit together, both the writing of it and the recording of it. I kept thinking back in my head into that really funny episode of The Office where Dwight tries to run a failed attempt at a fire drill. And I thought to myself, we should just air that, just play that audio, because it really could not be any more ridiculous than that was. Although this one really did come close. So we know that fire drills and emergency drills of all kinds are important to an ASC to get them done correctly. Any advice you'd like to give this poor fire captain who tried so hard to get them involved and get them educated before it happened? Then here we are, and he found that no one was listening to him, the poor guy. So what advice would you have for him?
So first of all, I too love that TV show and very much miss it. I do understand it's coming back. Thankfully, I don't find our surgery centers generally have fire drills anywhere near that exciting. But I think our issue with fire drills is often they are just really not taken seriously. And I think many centers do them simply because they're required to do them. But fire drills are a very important part of our emergency plan, planning for and drilling on an emergency such as a fire, helps us to make sure that we're always prepared for that type of a situation and that people don't panic, when the actual fire does occur. What I find when we're looking at, fire drill, analyses is that often they're done simply by just pulling the alarm and or calling out a code red. And people just leave their workplace and go to a rally point without really thinking about what the scenario is or what actually occurred. So all the fire drills are required to be scenario-based, which means you come up with a scenario, you identify a particular area where a fire occurs, and then you act out the scenario and make sure that everybody carries through with their responsibilities according to the emergency plan. And at least one of the scenarios every year needs to be in the operating room, which is another situation I'm not sure is always followed also. I should also point out that you shouldn't evacuate each time because, quite frankly, that is often not the case where you would actually have to evacuate during a fire. So as you're working with your employees on these fire drills, keep in mind that you should have different types of scenarios. I also, at the end of each of these drills, you should have a very good debriefing where you sit down and you identify issues with the fire drill, what went well, what went wrong, identify problems, write this up in an analysis, and develop a plan of action to fix them. Surveyors will be looking for this, especially with the new emergency preparedness plan that came out. There's a much higher level of expectation for the emergency preparedness of your organization. The documentation for the drill, a good documentation would include a description of the scenario, the response, who was involved in the drill, and as I mentioned, an analysis of the plan and the corrective actions that you're going to take. Also, make sure that you include the time of day that you did the drill. And another point I need to make is that if you run more than one shift in your operation, you need to have more than one drill each quarter, one drill for each shift. That's a rule that's been in place for a while, and many places forget about that. So we all know that we need to do four drills a year, one every quarter. And on an annual basis, we need to do fire safety training, and that training should include training on how to use a fire extinguisher. So make sure that that is part of your emergency plan also. I need to point out that drills need to be staggered throughout the day. They can't be at the same time each day. So plan, you know, in the four quarters, a drill like two in different times in the morning and two at different times in the afternoon. One suggestion I have is that you might want to contact your local fire department, which can help you both with the annual training and certainly the fire extinguisher training. And also they can help you perhaps with maybe one drill a year where they would walk you through or they would be there while you're doing the drill itself. So the big takeaway here is that you take the fire drills very seriously, and you do realistic scenario-based drills at least every quarter and do a very good job of documenting them. So that's it for this section. Okay, so it's time for a quick break, and then we'll come back and take a listener question. So our listener question this week is about Medicare quality reporting, and here it is. I understand that there are new quality measures in 2018. Can you explain what they are and when I need to begin collecting the data? So I thought I would start by explaining what Medicare quality reporting is, for those of you who are unfamiliar with it or who are new to the business. So Medicare quality reporting for ASCs, also known as ASCQR, is a series of required reporting on quality indicators within an ambulatory surgery center to assure that the organization receives the maximum amount of Medicare reimbursement that it can get. Failure to submit Medicare quality indicators will result in a reduction in the increase in your Medicare rates 2 years after the year that the data is submitted. So, for example, information that's submitted during 2018 will impact the 2020 Medicare payment year. So there are a number of measures. Each of the measures are numbered, such as ASC1, ASC2, ASC13, and 14. So the new indicators in 2018 are ASC 13 and 14. And many organizations are probably, especially with the ASC 13, are not gathering this information or not creating the data on a regular basis. So it's important that you begin collecting this data, as you'll need to have this information available when you submit your Medicare quality reporting data to QualityNet in 2019. You always submit it the year after the year in question. So ASC 13 is normothermia. It is this measure ascertains the response to the following question. What is the percentage of patients having surgical procedures under general or epidural or spinal anesthesia of 60 minutes or more in duration who are normothermic within 15 minutes of arrival in the post-anesthesia care unit? So for this particular measure, the numerator is the surgery patients with a body temperature equal to or greater than 36 degrees Celsius recorded within 15 minutes of arrival in the PACU. And the denominator is all patients, regardless of age, undergoing surgical procedures under general or epidural or spinal anesthesia greater than or equal to 60 minutes duration. So this particular measure has a sample size that's required and stated in the instructions. So if you do between 0 and 900 procedures per year, the yearly sample size has to be at least 63 people, quarterly 16, or a monthly sample size of 6. And if your volume is more than 901 or 901 or above, your yearly sample size would be 96 patients, quarterly 24, and monthly 8. So you should be gathering this information already. If you haven't, set up your system to begin reporting so at least you can get the first quarter's data put together. Also, remember, this is a regular quality measure that should be included in your regular quality improvement process. I would include this as a regular measure, report it on regularly, and of course, if there are any issues with this, then you develop some type of an action plan in order to make sure your patients are normothermic within that time frame. The second measure is ASC14, which is unplanned anterior vitrectomy. And this measure is used to assess the percentage of cataract surgery patients who have an unplanned anterior vitrectomy. So cataract surgery in this case is defined as 66982. That's CPT code 66982, which is cataract surgery complex, 66983, cataract surgery with IOL, one stage, and 66984, cataract surgery with IOL, one stage. And an unplanned anterior vitrectomy is an anterior vitrectomy that was not scheduled at the time of the patient's admission to the ambulatory surgery center. So this measure will ascertain the response to the following question. What is the percentage of cataract surgery patients who have an unplanned anterior vitrectomy? The numerator being all cataract surgery patients who had an unplanned vitrectomy, and the denominator being all cataract surgery patients. Now, if you're an eye surgery center or a multi-specialty surgery center that does eye procedures, you are hopefully already gathering the statistics, so this should not be any particular problem. But if you're not, you should be gathering this information, putting it into a log, and then tracking this these numbers so that you can report them at the end of the year. And again, as I mentioned earlier, with ASC 13, this should be a regular part of your quality improvement program and one of the regular monitors that you have. If you want any additional information about Medicare quality reporting, the ASC Association has a lot of information available. You don't have to be a member to gather the generic information about it, but go up to the ASC Association website at www.ascassociation.org and look under the Medicare reporting section there, and you'll get some charts and some references, as well as links to other websites where you can get information on specifically how to do your Medicare quality reporting. Also, you might want to look at the on the qualitynet.org website, the Ambulatory Surgical Center Quality Reporting Specifications Manual. The most current version is version 7.0A. So if you're not using that version for your Medicare quality reporting gathering, make sure you have a copy of that in your library. I have only spoken today or in this section about the two measures, ASC 13 and 14. There are many other measures that are required to be reported. And if you're not familiar with this area or confused about it, I really do recommend going up to the website at the ASC Association to get more information, or certainly consult with your friendly neighborhood consultant, such as our friends over at Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, and they can certainly help you through that process. Okay, that's it for this week's edition of ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Thank you so much for listening. We're very excited to be part of your regular weekly regime of news and information about the ambulatory surgery industry. Please don't forget to send in your questions so that we can keep you up to date on all the things that you need to be familiar with in order to run an ambulatory surgery center. So until next week, this is John Gailey and Judy D'Ambrosio signing off.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute, legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. Our other sponsor today is Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including The Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage, and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.